Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Conservationist Conversationalist. I am Brandon Anyert.
And I am Aiden Wood.
That was the best intro we've had so far, Aiden.
Thank you. I don't know if I've ever told you this, because I don't know if I've ever done it on this podcast, but I have a habit of singing when I'm stressed. Like, when I'll just start singing the things I need to say, and there's a lot of stress right now.
There is. It's a, we both were talking about it before we started recording. We're the greatest political the greatest political commentators in the world.
We're such good political commentators, we can't even say the phrase political commentators.
We both screwed up. Neither one of us watched the DNC.
Neither one of, I technically watched about 10 seconds of Biden's speech, and then I shut it off. Yeah, so neither of us watched the DNC. Both of us are going to be talking about the DNC because we both have opinions about the DNC despite not watching it. I intentionally did not watch it because I thought about it and I was like, this will not contribute anything to my life or the cause of fighting fascism. I just like knew that going like as it was approaching. And from what I gather, that seems to have been the case.
I had tweeted something earlier on this week where I said the difference between Republicans and Democrats is that Republicans don't care about your quality of life. They're like a factory farm. They don't care about your quality of life when they go, yep. Whereas Democrats act like you're sort of like, you know, it's free range Americans. And we tell them nice things. We pat them on the head and tell them they're our friends. And then they still kill you. And like, I feel like that's what this DNC kind of... You know, again, I didn't watch it, but I did see the response to it. Right, the discourse.
There was so much debate and dialogue, and that alone was so exhausting. Just seeing people talk about the DNC zapped mm-hmm. all of my energy.
For me, I saw a lot of people who, you know, listen to Obama speak and listen to Michelle Obama speak. Obviously, you know, history with Harris, as well as, you know, Biden's speech, which, you know, somebody mentioned, usually progressive commentator, mentioned his best speech in 2 years. Well, we've even seen Trump at times have a speech where we go, compared to what Trump usually says, hey, that actually got, he actually got some words out. And yet, that's because he has a speech right there. He has to make it look good. And then 2 days later, he's all caps on Twitter again, you know?
Yeah,
and
everyone has good moments.
Right, yeah, exactly. You know, so I think for me, it was like, I was saying to my mom today, I was like, you know, I won't lie. When I hear Obama speak, as a speaker, I go, the guy is so good. You know, like he's a motivator. He makes you feel good, but it just goes back to my, you know, analogy, my metaphor, I suppose, is what it is. My metaphor, which is, the problem is that when you look at massive deportations, when you look at war in the Middle East, when you look at, you know, go down the list, right? The Democratic Party is still responsible for a lot of those things. And they just make you feel a little bit better about life while it's all happening is the difference, you know? Whereas a lot of the time, the Republicans use religion and whatnot to make excuses for us why they're doing it.
I feel like, and this is something that, like, from everything I said about, like, what the DNC has been doing and everything that, like, in like, my work in, like, trying to get people to turn out to vote, like, canvassing and talking on phones, like, so much of the messaging is, like, stop Trump, like, we have to fight Trump. And that, like, mm-hmm. works for the people who are already engaged in politics and know, like, very much what Trump is doing. But a huge section of the voting populace is overworked, underpaid, exhausted, maybe does not like have a reliable access to the news or the internet, is not engaged in political discussion and isn't like passionately against Trump because of that ignorance, or because like it has not impacted them personally, but they are still impacted by lack of healthcare. They are impacted by lack of infrastructure. They are impacted by the pandemic. They're impacted materially by all of these things. And by not actively reaching out to those people and talking about issues like, I feel like so much of the dialogue of, like, Bernie or bust is, like, a few people trying desperately to sway a few, like, people on the internet who are hyper-engaged in politics to vote for Biden. And you're not going to win those people over because they've heard it all, like, they've seen it all, like, they're engaged in politics, they just took a different message away than you did, you know? Like, that you can't necessarily, like, sway them, and, like, it's kind of a waste of energy trying to. And then the people who are not engaged in politics aren't necessarily going to respond to this, like, fear-inducing message of, like, we have to stop Trump. I mean, I'm afraid of Trump as well, but, like, that's not going to work for somebody who isn't, like, already very well educated. And so I just don't understand what like the DNC or like the Democratic Party as a whole, or I don't just get what their strategy is. Like, and as individual commentators online, like it just feels like such a waste of energy.
My take sometimes is that, and I could be wrong about this, but this is how I feel. And so that's an important part of this is that that's obvious. So I'm one person, right? Who this is what I take away from it. And perhaps that's what other people are taking away from it. The way that I look at it is that I see a lot of the time that both the DNC and the RNC are much more committed and comfortable with continuing on with what is the status quo, even if that is sometimes terrifying for the rest of us. And a lot of the time it is to what I call the white people agenda, right? Which is that the difference is the Democrats, a lot of the time, a lot of the, you know, the supposedly online social media woke Democrats will have all these things. They'll have this pass it on bullshit on Twitter where they say, I'm not racist, blah, blah, blah. And that's all good and fine and dandy, but then they will smack down those people who are actually actively trying to help the communities and maybe not always doing things perfectly, whether it's how they speak and what they say and maybe the things they get wrong, people who are trying to learn, you know, in this new age that is continually evolving. But the problem is that what they say, they're sayers and they're not doers. And they'll talk about it over and over again, you know, whether it's the Alyssa Milano types and whatever on, you know, the Hollywood elite types who on Twitter, yeah, that you have a lot to say on Twitter and you have a lot of people that you're bashing. But those are the people who actually are trying to help. They're just not always getting it right. And it's a smackdown on the little guy continually. And I feel like sometimes when you look at the DNC and you look at the RNC, and I'm sorry, this is going to be a bit long-winded, but four nights of the DNC, right? And a process that is very antiquated still. And they make this comment where they say, we want to get young people involved in the political process, but the process is so fucking old. And when you're talking about four nights, and people who are confused as shit about stuff, they slammed AOC because she endorsed Bernie when that is part of the process, is, yeah, part of...
It's all symbolic.
Right? I've been involved in politics locally. I've been to local conventions, and it is painful how boring it is. It is painful, the processes they have to go through. I'm not saying all those things are going to be changed overnight, but when you extend out this party of sorts to four nights of, you know, just drooling over the establishment and completely disregarding the movement that progressives have had and what Bernie has created. I mean, look, if you like AOC, then you should like Bernie, right? If you like, you know, and so AOC is there. AOC is a star, and she's a star because of the progressive movement. And, you know, Rashida Tlaib, not invited. Ilhan Omar, not invited. Even though Tulsi can be absolutely wackadoodle at times, Tulsi, not invited, even though she received delegates. They only want to continue with the process that they, or the parts of the process they like. And they say that they have to, but they disregard the other parts that have been in place for years and years and years. And, you know, it's been a war on progressive values from, you know, the time that Bernie started all this. And the problem is you're not going to get young people involved if you continue to do things the way that you're doing them. And the problem that I see is I don't really think they care about getting young people involved. They want to make sure that the establishment continues to stay the way it is. And they are already, just in that possibility that Trump wins in November, they've already geared it up to blame Bernie fans. And the truth is, I don't really know a ton of Bernie fans. You did mention a few that, you know, will not change their minds, right? But
yeah,
I don't...
Sorry, continue.
No, I'm just about to finish up. I don't know a lot of Bernie fans right now who aren't going to probably vote for Biden, even though they probably hate Biden more than Hillary. They just didn't expect what was going to happen back when Hillary ran against Bernie and decided, Trump's not winning anyways, I live in a blue state. right? And I really do believe the most of the people I've talked to, they're voting Biden even though they can't stand him. A lot of them don't like Harris because although it is, you know, the surface thing is that, oh, it's nice, this is historic. Her prosecuting record is not great, you know, and I'd like to hold her hopefully to a progressive voting record rather than hold her hostage to her prosecuting record. But let's be real, none of us, it wasn't our first choice for VP either. And, you know, but anyways, yeah, so that's kind of, I don't know a lot of people who are going to vote a protest vote this year.
Yeah, and I know a few people, mostly just, like, from the internet, like, no one in real life, but, like, a lot of, even, okay, I just want to, like, say, because people, like, don't get this, like, voting for Biden is not the only form of harm reduction, and this is something that we learned, like, when we were, like, in training for, well, I mean, this is something that I learned in a lot of different areas, but, like, when I was training to do, like, door-to-door canvassing for folks, we were taught to, like, if somebody is adamant about not voting Biden, but they are, like, a progressive, if they are a Green Party, still keep talking to them, still actively engage them. Like, if they say that they're a Republican or Trump supporter, say, thank you for your time, move on. But if they're not voting for Biden, if they're, like, rabidly anti-Biden, but they're still an engaged, like, person, like, they're still going to vote down ballot. Like, it's important to not alienate people, to not drive people away, to not, like, ridicule them or cut them off from resources or make them feel ashamed. Like, because even if they aren't voting for Biden, are they still going to vote for, like, the Democrat nominee for state senator? Are they still going to vote for, like, city council, for, like, state house of reps? The Democratic Party needs to be willing to compromise with those, like, adamant progressives who aren't going to be voting for Joe Biden, because, like, saying that, like, oh, if you don't vote for Biden, like, you have no worth for us is, like, absolutely fucking ridiculous. And the fact that we're, like, so hyper-focused on this one race, this one contest, when there's so much else, and even outside of electoral politics, harm reduction means, like, forming a local tenants union or like, trying to unionize your workplace. Harm reduction can mean learning to grow your own food and knowing your neighbor so that if they're going through a rough time, like, you can provide them with food and supplies as they get through it. Harm reduction means joining local groups that are protesting ICE facilities in your region and, like, protecting people who are undocumented, you know? Like, there is so many different forms of harm reduction, and hyper-focusing on Biden is, in my opinion, a grave mistake. Like, and I just don't understand how, like, people who are, like, were super pro-Bernie and, like, super, like, call themselves anti-fascist are devoting so much energy to just, like, trying to cajole people into voting for Biden and not, like, spending that energy telling people you need to buy a fucking gun. You need to do these other things. And, like, not even just saying you need to do this. Like, here are resources to help you connect with people in your area. Like, here's how you can find those resources. Here's how you can, like, learn to teach yourself and support each other. Like, the fact, it's just, I can't even fucking talk right now. It's just such a waste of time. And it just makes me infuriated.
No, you bring up a lot of good points there. And the thing is, you know, for me, there's so many different facets to our, you know, to, I think, our, us as individuals when it comes to what represents this country, what represents us locally. And, you know, my feeling when it comes down to the presidency is that at the end of the day, it's not always as important as the Senate races, as the House races, but it is it's the main event. Unfortunately, it's how it's become. You know, when you look at what happened with the last election, it made that even worse because Trump became the anybody can be president candidate, essentially, right? Like, nobody expected him to win, and he wins, and now he's so polarizing in a bad way. Well, I guess a good way, depending on which side you're on. And that he's so polarizing that now if you're somebody like me who wants some semblance of normalcy back, but that's just a shallow normalcy, and I can at least recognize that. Whereas I go, I don't like Biden. Like I said, I disliked Hillary. I dislike Biden as much, if not more. But yet I'm sitting there looking at this guy who I cannot stand in office, and I want this, you know, well, at least we'll have some sort of normalcy back, right? And I, you know, and the truth is we don't. We'll just have somebody telling us we're okay. And it's kind of odd how that draws a parallel with the pandemic right now, because the problem I feel like I've had with the pandemic is that the people around me are saying, I hope everything's going to be okay, rather than when you're this little kid and wanting to just hear somebody say, no, it's going to be all right. You know, and so I guess that's this weird thing we have in our heads from the time we're kids, or at least some of us, that I want, that there is this want of the person who's going to say it's all right, even if it's not. And that, I think, is why people are so badly wanting to get Trump out, even though you're right that that's really only a very small part of this battle. Especially with how things have gone, you know, I mean, my gosh, you could go on forever about what's been happening in, you know, in Portland and I would say Seattle, but at least it seems like Seattle, drove out the, cops who were, basically kidnapping people and the federal troops. And, you know, but I mean, what still continues to go on in Portland, I've seen the craziest videos, I've reports of what's going on down there, and it's crazy thing that's happening on our own streets. But yeah, mm-hmm. when it comes to the DNC, you know, I still see the middle left, whatever you want to call it, neoliberals, whatever, and I see this constant discourse that is, let's make Trump out to be the monster that he is, and I don't understand why they don't realize that never worked and it won't work. Now, the 20th time that you post on Facebook that Trump had, you know, said that he was going to grab her by the, you know, and that's immoral to Christians, and you know, if you're a Christian or whatever, like the 20th time somebody sees that, they're not going to go, oh, now it's hit me, everybody. That's right. I shouldn't have voted for this guy. You know, I mean, it didn't work then. It's not going to work now. And they don't care. They don't care what a terrible person he is. They don't. They agree with a lot of what he's saying. And we have to remember, too, it was 3 million people more who voted for Hillary. It comes down to states at the end of the day, you know, when it comes to this election. But they keep pushing home those same things. And I don't know what they really want. I don't know what they expect to actually make happen. The Democratic Party is so focused on Trump, and they're not focused on who they're supposed to be focused on, which is us.
And I just want to say, I feel like so much of the discussion is framed as like, vote for Biden or vote for fascism. And although mm-hmm. I believe that like Trump is a fascist, like fascism is not about one person. It is about so much more than that. Like we have had the KKK and white supremacist groups infiltrating law enforcement and ICE like for decades. Like we have had deportation and like the rise of like right-wing authoritarianism for so long. And Biden like is going to continue to like enact some of those policies that either like support or uphold like policing systems and like this like racism and brutality in the prison industrial complex, and then also like fascism's still here. It is in America. It is present. White nationalism has been in America since its inception. It is the original sin of this country, to quote another podcast, Gaslit Nation. And it's not going to go away with Biden. So this idea that like voting for Biden is voting against fascism is a false like narrative. I think that Biden's administration will like not do anything against fascism. I think that it's going to continue to propagate like at best, at most, like it could like be furthered under a Biden administration. I think that we need to instead view it as, do you want fascism more quickly or more slowly? And there's a lot of accelerationists who are like, well, we should have fascism more quickly with Trump to piss people off. And my perspective, and I wrote a whole tweet thread on this, which you may have seen, but my perspective is that we need to fucking organize. Like having an actual anti-fascist resistance requires having like cities and towns having strong opposition, organized opposition, which takes trial and error. It takes a lot of preparation. You need to know who in your city you can trust. You need to know who you can rely on for help in times of need. You need to develop affinity groups. You need to learn how to shoot a fucking gun if you need to. You need to have a stockpile of food. You need to have like emergency backup plans in case phone lines in your city get cut, or in case you have like fucking tanks rolling through your neighborhoods and police gassing people in residential areas. Like, how are you going to keep yourself safe? How are you going to keep your neighbor safe? All of that takes time to organize. Under a Biden administration, fascism will continue to grow, but it will happen more slowly, which will give us more time to get into a place that we need to effectively resist, and not just like hashtag resist on Twitter, like actually resist fascism. And I feel like a lot of the people who are framing this conversation as vote for Biden or vote for fascism, as soon as Biden gets in office, will just be like, cool, we've beaten fascism, let's go back to our normal lives, as it continues to grow. And that's immensely frustrating to me.
Yeah, no, it's true. I saw a meme the other day that said, and it was a pro-Trump meme, and the meme said about that Trump has the NRA, you know, supporting him and blah, blah, blah. And it said Biden has Antifa, as if Antifa supporting Biden is bad. And I was like, the funny part about that meme is that the Antifa does not support Biden. The Antifa does not support either one of them or a political individual of any sort, really. And the, you know, people have this really misconception of what Antifa is. Antifa is not, you know, Senator Ted Lieu and I'm trying to think of some other, you know, Mikel Gillette and all those guys on Twitter. Antifa are the guys who are out there literally. You know, I heard a story allegedly that a girl who was in Portland who the police had shoved them toward the edge of an overpass. These people are getting kicked on the, you know, they're being thrown to the ground, kicked the crap out of them, you know, by police in Portland. And those are the Antifa. They're actually battling a lot of things going on right now, a fascist movement that is not, you know, not the people you see supporting Trump so much as the people who have been given this power by, like you mentioned, maybe the slower burn when it comes to Democrats, and then of course the more sped up burn that Trump has given it. He's just, you know, it was diesel before. Trump just poured gas on, you know, and now it's going crazy. You know, people have this total misconception of what Antifa is, especially just the fact that we still have this idea that it actually is an organized group, which it isn't. It's a belief that you're anti-fascism. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, as we move forward here, like you mentioned, it is about creating resistance, and it's also about really honestly taking a good hard look at where exactly we are headed politically. It's very important that we look at the fact that when people like to say they love, you know, this is a way to set people off, is when they say Bernie is so far to the left. I've even heard them now say Kamala, because of her voting record, is way even further to the left. You know, and which, you know, that stuff is crazy because it comes down to what people have determined progressive votes and such.
It's also fascinating because apparently most of America is left because most of America supports like progressive policies like Medicare for All, mm-hmm. and affordable college. And it's frustrating. And it's the fact that the entire theme of the DNC was not, here's how we Democrats are going to make your lives better. It was, here's how we Democrats are not going to be actively making your lives worse as fast as this current president.
No, which, it's first so of all, true. Like,
it also doesn't work because, like, there have been, like, some people who, at least up until the pandemic, like, were doing better under a Trump administration, not because of anything Trump did, in my opinion, but because, like, the economy was improving and, like it didn't have a material impact on their lives. And so, like, you can read all the news you want, but, like, in an era of so much fear-mongering and misinformation, and because, like, there is, like, some bias in, like, journalism based on, like, what generates advertising revenue. Like, yeah, absolutely. And I think that, like, it's normal. It's healthy to have, like, a reasonable amount of suspicion for things you hear on the media, including this podcast, guys. Like, don't trust us, okay?
We are opinions. We're not, you know, we're not facts.
I'm not saying, like, never trust any news, like, all news is fake, but I am saying, like, it's good to, like, be skeptical about where you're getting your information. Obviously, some people go really, really far with that. And so, like, there are people who, like, have not seen the impact of Trump's administration in their daily life. So when they see, like, all these news reports of the disasters that a Trump administration has led to, it looks like this is fear-mongering. This is just trying to get me riled up so I'll spend money. This isn't, like, real. It's just like trying to get clicks. It's trying to get views. And so, like, there's just, like, so many people who have not, like, had that material impact, but, like, have had, again, like I said earlier, have had a material impact in other areas, like healthcare, like the economy, like income inequality, like losing a good union job and then losing your healthcare as a result of that, or like struggling under student loan debt. And we have to reach those people. Like Bernie, like there were like things that he did wrong in his campaign, absolutely. But like, you can't say that he didn't actively, and his like campaign didn't actively try to reach all of the community. Like Bernie knocked on every person's door, liberal, conservative, voter, non-voter. Like the campaign I'm working on is just targeting Democrats who don't vote very often, or like Democrat leaning people who don't vote frequently. Like, that's like our target demographic. That's where we've directed our resources. Bernie tried to reach everyone. And it's fascinating to hear like people who I work with now who had worked on Bernie's campaign these past few months say like, yeah, it was weird. I was in a neighborhood around Las Vegas and I had a conservative point a gun at me and tell me like to get the fuck off because I was ruining America. Apparently like that was like something that happened fairly often in some regions during Bernie's campaign, is like volunteers having guns pointed at them. But like, and the fact that they were like willing to do that, the fact that in, what was the first primary? Iowa. Yeah. Iowa caucus. First. That's what I meant. The Iowa caucus. Like I was reading stories about how, like some of the Bernie, like volunteers in the Bernie campaign were reaching out to like immigrants who worked at an Ethiopian meatpacking plant, and like demographics that either didn't speak English or didn't have like reliable access to news media, didn't know how to sign up to vote, weren't like, no other like campaign or group was reaching out to them and getting them educated to vote and getting them involved in the political process. And the fact that like Bernie's campaign was doing that, I think like is deeply meaningful, and I wish that the Biden campaign at all was willing to fucking do that.
Yeah, and then, but that goes back to the comfortability factor of what they're comfortable with, and that is completely out of the comfort zone of both major parties. And going back to a little bit what I was saying too, a little bit what you were saying, is that, you know, when it comes to the media right now too, it's not that, again, like you said, it's just about being very, very basically understanding what you're reading, right? Because there's so much different stuff out there right now that people will read a headline and it'll scare the crap out of them. Know the difference between opinion and what is an actual article based on fact. You know, I've seen that with the pandemic as well, where somebody will quote a whole article that was 100% an opinion by somebody who is not even qualified probably to give that opinion. And, or maybe it wasn't peer-reviewed by other people who might want to overlook that person's, you know, observations. And so just know what you're, you know, for instance, we are I would say biased, opinionated podcast. You know, we are not I think that people need to make sure they understand that when they're looking at the new. And I think that, again, going back to what I was saying about how left candidates are, that's used completely as a way to make the progressives seem crazy. Bernie, on the spectrum of progressive, or, you know, left to right, when you go around the world, is just left of center. I don't think if you listen to what the Republicans say, or even the establishment Dems, you would think Bernie was so far off to the left that the dude was, you know, had a hammer and sickle on his hand. And, you know, and that's just not the case. He's somebody who is just barely left of center, who believes that in the, really the main thing is the right to us being healthy individuals, you know?
And the thing is, so many Americans agree with that. Like, it's like a really popular position. And Bernie was able to reach a lot of people, including Trump supporters. There are like our Trump supporters who like, we're like, yeah, I probably would have voted for him if it hadn't been Hillary.
Yeah.
And like, so like when you call Bernie like crazy and his ideas like are stupid, like you're insulting a lot of Americans as well. And it's like, and what's frustrating is that like Biden himself has said, like, if you don't like me, don't vote for me, like has not been willing to like really listen or compromise. And it's just fucking frustrating.
No, yeah, that's been Biden since the beginning of this, you know, and that still tends to be him. You know, that's where he's a little bit Trumpy in some ways, you know. So he has a good speech and everybody goes, oh, okay, well, you know, the guy can talk great. I mean, I hate the fact that the benchmark set by Democratic voters is that he can formulate a sentence. I mean, that's a pathetic benchmark, everybody, if that's what you're, you know, if that's what you're.
And okay, also, like when I went to see Bernie speak in Santa Ana, California, which I believe is a city that hadn't really ever had a big political rally because it's predominantly low income, predominantly mm-hmm. Latino. But I went to see Bernie speak at Santa Ana. Later that day, I saw a tweet or something that he was giving a speech in Bakersfield, California. That night, I watched a live stream of him from Las Vegas giving some speech. The next day, I watched a live stream of him in El Paso, Texas, giving a speech. And meanwhile, Biden will just be gone for weeks at a time.
Because he has to be, because when he's not going on a speech, he is getting angry and frustrated, and it starts to look bad. I mean, I don't think it's any coincidence that Biden had, whether you want to believe the polls or not, whatever, but he had, you know, but if you're going to go by the polls, had this large lead over Trump. Then he gets angry and mad. I forget exactly what it was about, actually, now that I'm trying to think of it. But he has this one video that comes up where he kind of gets angry and frustrated about something, and then it starts to drop off. And that's because, I mean, look, if I'm either one of those campaigns, Trump or Biden, I don't want to have a debate, because it doesn't work out for either one of them. I mean, you know, they both are incapable. They're not good at keeping cool under pressure. The only debate that is probably going to make any sort of sense is going to be Harris and Pence, if it even is going to be Pence, because I still have this inkling that he's going to drop some sort of surprise here in a bit where he says Pence is out and Ivanka's in. But
oh, that's an idea. Is Ivanka's older than 35, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or is she?
I think so.
Probably sure. Know that I don't even know sure. If she's qualified. Anyways, but Jared Kushner? That would be the worst.
But yeah, no, it's demoralizing, you know, when you really look at a lot of the things happening. What I just hope for is, like you mentioned, that we can slow things down, that we can, hopefully, you know, I think what's going to be interesting to watch is where do we go from here? You're seeing a lot of Republicans being pulled over, and it's because they're not all that much different, if we're being honest. You have like Kasich and the Lincoln Project, which I absolutely hate. I just hate the love for them. They're being pulled over, and there seemed like there were as many Republican speakers at the DNC as there were Democrats.
Yeah, and like, no, like, actual progressives. And it's like, the Democrats are, like, always talking about how we're going to be a big tent party, except, like, the big tent's going to include Republicans and not
exactly
certain sections of the exactly. Democratic Party, which is, like, frustrating. But also, I think it makes sense because, like, it's safe to say that, like, the Republican Party is no longer a conservative party. You know, it's not a neoconservative party.
Or, they're not debt hawks like either.
They don't have the same values as the Republican Party claimed to have. Now, I think that, like, for a lot of average everyday Republicans, like, I mean, like, it's pretty split, but there's, like, a lot of folks that doesn't really, like, matter to, because, like, party affiliation isn't just about, like, ideology or abstract policies. It's also about, like, your family history. It's about, like, your demographics. It's about, like, a sense of identity, like, even more than, like, if the Republican Party turned heel and, like all of a sudden AOC and like Bernie joined it and like changed it entirely, there'd still be a lot of people who wouldn't join or wouldn't vote for anyone with a Republican by their name, because like it's like psychological, it's not just ideology. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like the Democratic Party like saw this like Republican Party, the old Republican Party, be hollowed out and like filled with like Trumpism as an ideology, and is like, oh cool, like we can like fill like that role. We can like do this ideological shift, kind of like a hermit crab like outgrowing its shell and moving to a new one. You know, like
exactly.
So I mean, like, and it's something else I was thinking about this weekend is that it's fascinating that like in the 2000 election, like Ralph Nader was like the spoiler candidate, which obviously I think is bigger than that. Like, there's a reason people vote for third party candidates, and like blaming like the voters and not like the Democratic Party for not listening to what the voters wanted, and It's just laziness on the part of the party. That's not the point. Point is, the fact that like everyone was condemning Ralph Nader and Green Party voters for voting Green Party or voting third party, because like we got George Bush, and that was like horrible. Like, and so like for a decade or more, for a couple 2 decades, like Ralph Nader's been vilified, and the Green Party's been vilified by people because they got George Bush in office. And now, if George Bush like joined the Democratic Party, we would like applaud him, you know?
You're so right.
We have all these like former Republicans like endorsing Joe Biden and joining the Democratic Party. And it's interesting. It's like clearly like it wasn't a big deal to you that George Bush got into office, right? Like,
exactly.
The fact that Ralph Nader you just wanted to like say fuck you to Ralph Nader and didn't really care as much about George Bush, because like you'd be fine with George Bush now, apparently, you know?
Because everybody loves the fact they see the pictures of him, you know, laughing with Michelle Obama, and they go, oh my God, this is adorable. The guy who committed how many war crimes is friends with, you know, with Michelle Obama. And you know, and they forget the fact that Dick Cheney and George W. Bush committed multiple war crimes. They
got so many like Americans needlessly dead as well. It's not, I mean, obviously like like, we got, like, so many Iraqis killed, but we also sent a lot of, like, young people off to die in a war that didn't need to happen. We lied to the American people. And, like, that was seen as, like, the worst thing ever. But, like, instead of condemning George Bush, like, now it's Ralph Nader, like, whose name we can't speak. And it's like, right. Why? Why is that a big deal to you if you're so willing to, like, just adapt to those George Bush values anyways, apparently? I'm not talking to... I know that that's not something that rings true for, like, specific voters of the Democratic Party, but, like, the apparatus as a whole is just insanely frustrating. And it makes me feel like the Democratic Party is not a party of any sort of values. It's a party about winning. It, like, and, like, and I think that goes true with, like, the party structure in general. Like, mm-hmm. the reason that, like, so many Republicans, like, support Trump, even though, like, they'll also, like, condemn him privately or they'll, like, say bad things about him, but they're not brave enough to, like, oppose him publicly, because, like, they know that, like, supporting Trump will help them win. No ideological basis. Like, it's just about, like, they need a job. They need to win elections to keep their job and keep their income. So they'll, like, do whatever they need to do to win their job. I'm actually kind of starting to think that this whole representative democracy system with, like, regular elections and stuff, like, maybe was a shitty idea.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, because there's so many things that play a part into that as well, right? Because Republicans know that if Trump is in for another 4 years, chances are Ginsburg does not fulfill her the next 4 years. And that, you know, that's one of the most that's the biggest trap we're in, actually, because, you know, we sit there and go, we don't like Biden, we don't like, and he's not going to cure this, that, and the other, and that's 100% true. But we also want to make sure that whoever is put on that Supreme Court when Ginsburg is done is not, you know, a Brett Kavanaugh type, because at least we've seen with Roberts and trying to think of the other one's names, is it Gorsuch, who at least they do seem to have at least some professionalism in that role that Kavanaugh obviously does not have, and that's not a surprise to any of us. But no, you know, when you watch the Lincoln Project and you watch Kasich be brought into that big tent, as you mentioned, rather than expand it to Rashida and Ilhan and other progressive, Ro Khanna, for instance, you know, other progressive Democrats. What it makes me wonder as we move down the line, and this might be 20 years from now, maybe it's 5 years from now, I don't know. I've been shocked about how the world has gone in the last decade. But I mean, it does make me wonder, are we seeing the makings of the new right? And are we going to have a progressive party down the line? And what is that going to mean? I mean, in Canada, for instance, it's a very slow process, but you are seeing seats being taken by NDP candidates and Green candidates, even in Canada. Is that where we start? We already have a little bit. We've seen progressive, but they're just still under the heading of Democrats. But we have seen them, you know, have become members of Congress, members of the Senate. But do we start to? Is there going to be an actual different name of that party as well, where we're going to see a progressive? You know, because I don't know if AOC. I love AOC. I'm not sure if I see her, as you mentioned. She knows she has a job now too. I don't know what decision she would make in the hypothetical situation that was like, are you going to be at the Democrats or the Progressive Party? She's a progressive, but she also knows that right now where her job is with the Democratic Party. And that goes back to your wondering about whether this system really is one that works. But I mean, you know, without going too far in depth, that's what I foresee in the future. I think that the far right, as I do believe, not necessarily fascism, but the alt-right, which is fascist, but a spur off of it all, I think there are the death throes of that. I think the fascism lies more in law enforcement, at least the parts that are the most dangerous. And that is something that has been created by not just Republicans, but many politicians over the years. I do believe that we're in the death throes of the far right. I think Trump was a part of that. It was, we need to, you know, it was a backlash to Obama being the first black president. And I do think, so I think that shift is that we have to look at it and go, Biden's always been right of center when you're looking at the global political spectrum. Hillary, right of center. Obama, right of center. And Bernie, just left of center. Ed Markey, maybe a little bit further to the left, you know, that kind of thing. And so I don't know how much that's going to change as we move forward into 2024. Obviously, it all depends a lot. That's going to depend on what happens in November. it is going to be an interesting shift, because I'm not sure if progressives have the numbers necessarily to compete with the congealing of Republicans, and or at least, you know, middle ground Republicans and middle ground Democrats. But I do believe you're going to see a little bit of what we've seen in Canada, which is progressives at least fucking things up as much as they can, you know, to break that up. I think it's going to be a tough road for us, to be honest with you, for those of us who are, we think it's getting better. Unfortunately, I think this, what's the word I'm looking for? Congealing is not the best one, but when Pete Buttigieg dropped out and they said, you're doing this with the votes.
Consolidating.
Thank you. So basically, you know, the middle ground is consolidating their votes essentially. And I think it's going to be tough on progressives, because we're going to have to fight the small battles to get to the top. And hopefully, like you said, maybe it does slow down, though, at least some of the fires that are burning. But it's going to be tough for us, because I would have said Medicare for All was a definite possibility 4 years ago. And now I'm not convinced that's the case. I think that we might see, hopefully, the states start to act as types of nation states, and maybe we'll have better programs statewide. But I just don't see a universal healthcare at this point, because we continue to go down the most comfortable route when it comes to the parties.
I feel like part of me feels like the destruction of like America as an entity might come sooner than like Medicare.
I think you're right. I mean, we've seen with the pandemic balkanization, you know, of sorts, or what could look like balkanization when you had the Western states and the, you know, Northeast and whatnot. And I still think that the movements for secession are more vocal than ever. And when I say that, it probably sounds crazy to some people who are going, what is this nut job talking about? I'm not necessarily saying that's going to happen in the next 20 or 30 years. I'm just saying that it's definitely moving at a more rapid pace than we ever saw it move before. And you can't look at how things have been taken care of politically, with the, whether it be the pandemic or whether it be other things politically. You can't really look at how things have been dealt with around this country and say that the country operates unified anyways. You know, the unification really comes down to regions. And that's why I think that we're moving toward that in whatever way that is, whether it's just the states start acting more independently while also being under a sort of like the European Union, for instance, right? So some sort of unification that might be an economic unification, but maybe legal or political separation, you know, which I think is all possibilities.
I mean, yeah, I don't think it's going to happen soon, but I mean, no. I think that the seeds are sown. I think that the Absolutely. Ideas are out there. And I feel like whenever you say, like, talk about, like, the secession of, like, Cascadia or California or the Great Lakes region, people automatically, like, assume that you're talking about, like, the Confederate South. Like, and basically, like, say, like, oh, well, like, you can't use the word, like, secede because, like, that's what the Confederates did. And, like, that's why we had the Civil War. And it's like, the Confederacy wasn't bad because they seceded. The Confederacy was bad because they enslaved people and fought right. hard for their right to enslave other human beings. Like, the act of seceding, I don't think is inherently morally, like, bad. I think it's morally neutral. I think the act of enslaving other human beings is morally bad. Like, and the only issue with secession is, like, the fact that they seceded in order to continue doing that.
Well, you look at everything that's happened after the fall of the USSR. Are we going to sit there and go, those countries are bad for seceding? you know, I mean, the ones that made a better lives for their people. You know, would we look at Quebec if they had succeeded in seceding? Would we have looked at them and said that they were as bad as the Confederacy? No, I mean, everybody thinks Quebec's a little crazy, but not in that way. You know, and. You're exactly right. The reasons that the Confederacy had for seceding were the problem. It's, again, kind of like when you go back to the, you know, the reasons people voted for Trump rather than a different Republican was because they wanted to get away from the establishment. That's something I can actually level with. The reasons they wanted to get away from the establishment that involved racism, fascism and xenophobia, those are the parts I can't fuck with, you know? And so people are always so keen on associating things, and mainly associating words and terminology, without actually understanding the reasons why things are bad. What you said about the Confederacy, that's proof of it right there. But man, I tell you, it's going to be a, we always say this, right? But it's going to be a, we're living through a crazy time this generation.
And I just want to say before we like start wrapping up, the Black Socialists of America have a map of mutual aid and dual power entities across America on the Black Socialists of America website. So Google that. Like, you can look for worker co-ops, you can look for community land trust programs, you can look for like mutual aid groups, locally worker strikes that you can support. So definitely use that. Start connecting with people in your region, because I know that like in a digital age we're all online, but ultimately, like, if you do have like police come into your residential neighborhood and start gassing people, like, your friend that lives across the country is not going to be able to be there to wash tear gas out of your eyes. The people who live in your immediate vicinity are going to be able to do that. The best thing you can do right now is start reaching out, and again, buy a gun.
And I do want to add on to that, though, if you do suffer from mental health issues like I do, please, proceed with caution with those.
Or if you live in like a house with like a domestic abuser, like right. who like if or somebody who might get violent, or if you have like kids and you don't trust that like you'll be able to keep your gun secure given your living situation, like don't get a gun. But like, I do recommend like learning how to shoot one, even if you don't physically keep it in your house, 100%. Because. Yeah, like, go to a shooting range with, like, a couple friends that you really trust and, like, develop that skill set. Develop a familiarity with, like, how to put a gun together, take it apart, like, familiarize yourself with the different styles, like, what to expect, what it feels like to shoot one. Because even if, like, you have the option of, like, not having one now, like, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you might not have that option.
And familiarize yourself, too, with there's plenty of other, with other means of protection, because that's important as well. I want to also throw this over to you, Aiden, because I was supposed to remind you, you are hosting a stream, and so tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this next week, probably, I'm going to be hosting a fundraising stream to support a local LGBT community center, actually the only LGBT community center in Lansing, Michigan. It is at risk of shutting down because it costs like $12,000 a month, I believe, in rent to keep their doors open, supporting the community, but they were not able to hold fundraising events and such during the pandemic. And request for donations during the pandemic. And so they have to raise enough money to keep their doors open for the community. And so I'm going to be hosting a fundraising stream to support them. And I'm going to be trying to play, I'm going to try and do a 100% run of Celeste, which is a very difficult video game that I am very bad at, and I don't know if I'll be able to do it, we'll see. But I'm going to try and play it. It's going to be going for 3 days, probably starting Wednesday. I'm going to ask for a time off work and going until Friday night or Saturday, maybe longer, we'll see. But yeah, I'm really excited. And I reached out to the community center, and like, they're going to be posting on their social media to invite folks from the community who have benefited from their services to come speak and talk about what it's meant to them. So one important thing that your city needs is hubs, resource hubs, places where people can go and physically talk to other people or store resources, pamphleting materials, places that can act at a meeting as a meeting space. That's called a hub. And community centers like have the potential to be that. But even more generally, just like LGBT people in the city like need to have a form of support, especially now.
Absolutely. So. Well, thank you for doing that, Aiden. And best of luck too, and having that be very successful. As for me, I don't have something that I'm doing that's quite that amazing. But if you do want to listen to Lemonade Magazine podcast as a break from all the craziness in the world, you can find that in the links in the description. I've got new music and interviews each week. Aiden, I know these are tough times to be doing this podcast, actually. You know what? We're going to keep on doing as much as we can and keep on hopefully fighting the good fight. Everybody, thank you so much for listening, and we will be back soon.